a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Well, we're obviously into the stage where the bills are all entered and committee process is definitely in full swing. And at this point, myself anyways, I'm going to cover a little bit on the higher education side of things, and then Representative Hunoff will talk on the K-12, and then obviously we welcome any of your questions that you folks may have for us. But specifically on the higher education side of things, a bill that has worked its way over to the House side, but something that we dealt with on the Senate side that still is definitely on the minds of our folks in higher education, and specifically with the technical institutes. I know when we dealt with that on the Senate side, dealing with Senate Bill 5, that was something that was of deep concern for our technical institutes because they work in a totally different model, and so we I know myself, and along with our friends in the House side, will continue to monitor that legislation, because as we look at things, not only as folks look at economic development, but as we look at meeting our needs in our local communities, the technical institutes fill a strategic role where they are able to adapt not only on a year-to-year basis, but even within a calendar year. They can start up a new program. Obviously, if there's a significant need for their involvement to meet the employers that need those trained individuals, but they also are able to alter programs and find the necessary staff to make that work in their local communities, which operates in a different concept compared to what we see on the Board of Regents system, where it obviously is something that requires various years of development to start those new programs. And we also know that, and myself included, as a product of the Board of Regents system, we know that, especially you look at a place like South Dakota State University, where it's a land-grant mission of teaching, research, and extension, those are all missions that are different than what the technical institutes work with. And so I know I asked my friends on the House side to look to some options with Senate Bill 5 when they work through that legislation. But further, on some issues that obviously have transcending effect, whether it's in the technical institutes, public and private universities, are the various scholarship bills. And we certainly applaud the efforts of my counterpart, the Majority Leader Senator Olson, on his continually pressing for a needs-based scholarship. That's something that we looked at even just a few years ago. We know our folks at Dakota Wesleyan University were extremely supportive of South Dakota being, you know, one of the final states to actually have a needs-based scholarship. And we're even hearing more talk that there's potential private donors out there who want to partner with South Dakota if we'll put up the necessary public funds to make that happen, which is very neat. Our students across the state obviously come from various backgrounds, and anything we can do to help out those on the needs-based level as opposed to strictly looking at academic level is extremely important. So we'll continue to support those efforts and do whatever we can to work with our friends on the Republican side. Next up, on the Opportunity Scholarship, which continues each year, it seems like we have some type of Opportunity Scholarship legislation that either alters the requirements or looks at eligibility, or along with how much is given in the award amount. But just two different areas that I'd like to focus on. One of those is a bill that I have in partnership with Representative Munsterman, would be to require that students who receive that opportunity scholarship, that they would have to stay in South Dakota for 5 years upon their graduation. And so when they sign up to actually accept the scholarship in that application process, they would sign a promissory note. And with that promissory note, it would say that it's interest-bearing should they not stay in the state and have to return those funds back to the Treasury here in South Dakota. We feel this is extremely important to remind our young people that we want them to stay here in our state. If we're going to make an investment in them, we feel that there should be some criteria on their part to help us out. So we'll work on that. We also even have a potential amendment to the legislation already to even look at those individuals. Let's say maybe as a freshman they didn't decide to or didn't have any intention of staying in South Dakota. But hopefully as they progress in their college career that they looked around and thought, you know, this is a great place to live. It's an excellent place to raise a family. And I'm starting to find some opportunity on how we can stay here and make a future. Well, we should have the option in this opportunity scholarship that should they decide at their sophomore or junior years, or perhaps maybe even senior, but at least for sure the sophomore junior, that they could receive the full amount yet so they don't lose out and that they're still eligible, obviously, if they have met those requirements when they were as a freshman. happen. So we want to make it definitely user-friendly. Lastly, there and it's kind of in tandem to this and a similar type of opportunity scholarship legislation would simply say if they graduated early to still allow those recipients to receive the full amount. We shouldn't penalize those young people in our state who are able to finish college on a very speedy path. Myself, I guess it took 4.5 years, but those that can get done in 3 or 3.5, more power to them, and we're proud of that effort. With that, I've had a chance to kind of explain the higher education, and like I mentioned, Representative Hunoff joins me here as we close out the week for this 2013 legislative session. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. Well, as critical as the higher ed components are, I think we all agree in this building that the K-12 issue that we face is even more important, and not to diminish the higher ed part, but we have to have students who are well-prepared, ready to go to the tech schools and the colleges if we're going to really be successful in the state. And I think we also all agree in this building that we've really created a problem over the last couple of years in K-12 funding. And the past is the past, and we don't want to revisit all those issues, but I hope we can agree moving forward that we need to do better. I remember a time out here before these dire cuts when everybody agreed that K-12 funding was short, that we had to do better. Back in the years 2007, 2008, 2009, before the cuts, we all agreed we had to do better for the funding. Since then, we froze funding for a year, cut all sorts of categorical aids, and then cut funding 8.6%. So the net result is that schools have basically fallen behind in real dollars, about $500 per pupil in the funding formula. And I passed out a graph that kind of shows where we should be and where we are today. And it's the number one issue we face in this legislature. And fortunately, I think that a number of legislators, hopefully a majority, on both sides of the aisle agree with that, because I understand there's 10 bills dealing with per pupil funding, and that's encouraging. Bills brought by folks from both parties. We've started to hear some of those bills already. We had one in House State Affairs on Wednesday. We'll have another one next Monday. Those are brought by Representative Julie Bartling, and her first bill, which would have developed a 3-year plan so we could catch back up to where we should be according to the graph and make up that $500 difference. That did die, but it was a very good discussion, and I think it's, we've got to start somewhere. Julie will have another bill on Monday that basically moves the figure, the increases from inflation or 4% instead of inflation or 3%. So that would also give us a pathway to try to catch up a little bit. There's some other good bills out there. Representative Wink has one, and I think a number of other bills. Representative Kyle Shanefish, a new legislator, I think showed some real leadership today. He brought a bill to House taxation. That's not a total fix, but at least it addresses an issue in giving some kind of an inflationary adjustment to the property tax levy that's used for pension and insurance. And it's, again, not a fix, but it would help some school districts. And if we can't come up with an overall solution, I think we do have to do these kind of little smaller fixes. And fortunately, that passed out on an 8-4 vote. It'll go to the floor, and at the very least, we'll have another good discussion on it, because that's kind of where we're at right here. We've got a lot of new legislators, 35 new legislators, I think. And even for those of us who've been around a while, it's a complicated issue, and certainly for the new ones, there's a certain learning curve. So I commend those legislators who have brought these bills. I really commend the education community for their patience. You can see in the testimony that their patience is wearing a little thin, but they're coming and doing their best to educate legislators and policymakers on where they're really at. That one legislator summed it up pretty well when he said that they now have first grade classes with 30 kids in them. We've clearly increased class sizes as we've made these cuts, hurt schools in all sorts of ways. But he said one good example, they now have first grade classes with 30 kids. I think it was Larry Jonke from Irene that said that. And he said, imagine if you can, if you've got 6 or 7-year-old grandkids like I do or kids, you can about imagine what that might be like. He said it's like having 30 jackrabbits on a flatbed trailer. He said it's just pretty much unmanageable. And maybe if we had a video of those 30 kids in a classroom, that would make a difference out here. But I do think legislators from both parties are recognizing that we have an issue. I think most of them campaigned on the idea that we have to do better for education. And now, the rubber kind of hits the road. Now we're going to have 10 bills or more where they actually have to make a vote on these. And I'm pretty confident that if revenue projections hold up and if and if the school officials make their case, which I think they are making, that we can do better than what's recommended right now in the budget. I hope we can. Right now, the governor is recommending a 3% increase. It's really not a 3% increase when you recognize that we're taking away some of the one-time bridge monies that we've used to just help them stay afloat over the last couple of years. So those one-time monies are going away. We're recommending a 3% increase. Again, one superintendent said that's really only about a 1.5% increase for him. So hopefully we can do a 4% increase, which, again, wouldn't even we would continue to fall behind in real dollars even if we did a 4% for a lot of school districts. But I think there is a recognition on behalf of legislators on both parties that we have to do better, and I think we're on a much better trajectory than we've been on the last couple of years. So I'm confident about that. If we don't do better, the consequences are not good. I mean, we shift more to property taxes. I don't think that's acceptable to anybody. In fact, we had that discussion a little bit in House taxation today on Representative Shane Fish's bill, which does push a little more onto property taxes, although I think it's a Band-Aid for some school districts and maybe something we should do. But if we continue to go down that route of shifting to property taxes, especially through opt-outs, we're going to end up with a very inequitable tax system as far as how we fund education in South Dakota. At some point, the courts will say that's not fair, and we'll really be back to square one. The other option is hurting. We raise property taxes and or we hurt the kids, and I don't think any legislator out here wants to really do either one. So hopefully we can come together in these next 4 weeks and come up with some real solutions. So with that, I think we'd be happy to open it up for questions on education or anything else you want to talk about.
This question is for, I'm sorry, Victoria Wicks with the Public Radio. This question is for Senator Frerichs. You were talking about opportunity scholarships. The graduates would stay in South Dakota. Now, I know that South Dakota has a low unemployment rate, and we're looking for workers here. But are we looking for workers in fields that require a college education? I know School of Mines grads get high salaries right out of the chute. They get they graduate and they get hired, but I'm not sure how many of them are in South Dakota. What's available for opportunity scholarship graduates in South Dakota?
Yeah, well, definitely, and it's a very relevant question, but even if you look at things, obviously, your folks that come from School of Mines and look in the engineering fields or wherever it may be, and obviously, as we see the need for the physics program and areas like that, we need to do our part, though, throughout the state to provide those opportunities. And we can see that a little bit as you look at not only manufacturing that has amped up their production and abilities here in South Dakota. I mean, obviously, Bell Brands is a prime example, but there's other places. You know, those facilities take... and have minimum requirements usually of some type of post-secondary education. And so the need is out there for our people across South Dakota to be not only higher skilled, because we see, as I mentioned, all those manufacturing jobs, but even if you just take agriculture as a whole as an example, it's no longer just the case that our folks go directly into those positions as entry level or start out with very little skill. And that's obviously is by far our number one industry in the state. So there's the need for those folks to be on the sales side and obviously in anywhere else in the mechanical components. But some of that mechanical, and it's not just in agriculture, it could be in construction and industrial. They require a strong presence of technology involvement, and like I say, almost all of those require some type of schooling. So as far as to give an actual gauge on, yes, we know we have relatively low unemployment compared to other states, the point would be that we want these young people to work very hard to find that opportunity, and in some cases it may not just be handed to them as far as what's going to be available. It may not be in their hometown. Perhaps it's in a rival town that they fought against in high school sports. But the point would be that there are options, and especially as you look, you don't have to even go very far from Pierre to tell that there are a number of jobs that are available that we need to have a higher skilled workforce. So that's going to be it is a good problem to have. But obviously, in deference to the folks at School of Mines, they need to be looked at for some options. And we can see that engineers are needed all across the board, not only on the water management, but obviously in structuring various developments across our state. Urban sprawl is a continual issue that we see in South Dakota as more folks gravitate to the more urban places, but it obviously requires land to add those people to those communities. But very good question, but I'm confident as far as the tracking, if folks are wondering how can the Board of Regents keep track of these individuals, right away when you receive the scholarship, they are tracking that individual through their progress in college, not only on grade point average, but in making sure that they meet all of the other requirements. So that's very possible and it's doable. I have heard a little bit of concern from the budget office where they want to make sure that there may be necessary funds to help with some administration. But again, that's most of that's already being done right now through the Board of Regents.
Representative Hunhoff, I just saw a study of South Dakota education in the nation, and South Dakota ranked lowest. That's not all funding, is it? Why are we ranking so low? And I also listened to an NPR report, and there someone was proposing having something like a bar exam for teachers. Would you support that plan?
Well, certainly, I don't know the exact plan. I think you're referring to the Education Week study where we came out with a D, the lowest in the country. Is that the report that you're talking about? Okay. I'm not sure, so I'm not sure what they graded us on. I mean, I think we know that we've got real challenges here, and most of them, I think, I think most of them, they don't all relate to funding, but a good share of them do relate to funding. You know, when you're paying your teachers the 51st in the nation, when your per pupil support is the lowest in the 7-state region, and this is where we're really competing. I mean, some people want to compare us to California, Washington D.C., and states 1,000 miles away, but I mean, really compare yourselves to the states in the region, and there is it's just really a dire situation. So I think it does kind of come down to funding. I'd like to see more accountability measures, and I think the teaching community would agree with that. As long as they're not punitive, as long as they're done in a positive way, I think all the accountability that you can provide, both for teachers, students, and school districts as a whole, is a good thing. But I don't think that can be an excuse for not addressing the real issue, which is funding. I think some people, instead of tackling the real issue, which is that we've fallen far, far behind in funding, they came up with all these other things. Well, I'll fund it if you do this, or I'll fund it if you do that, or if we study this, or get more accountability there. Oddly enough, some of them say, well, we don't. Then when we start to do that, they say, well, I guess we're getting pretty good reports, so I guess we don't have to fund any better because we're funding the poorest in the region and we're getting better results. So the school districts can't win, or they say, well, you're not doing good enough in this category, so I guess we don't want to give you any more money. I mean, there's no win situation for the school districts. They're darned if they do and darned if they don't. We've got to focus, and that's what the legislative session should be about. We should try to narrow the focus down to what is the real key issue here, and it's not about, it's not about how well we're testing students or teachers. The tests can be good or bad, like any test. The real issue for South Dakota is that we've fallen far behind in funding in every level. And when we fall far behind in other areas, we're very careful that we pay our state employees a competitive wage. And we, every year we track that, and we have special dollars to move state employees to midpoint and try to be competitive with the private sector, competitive with neighboring states. We hear all sorts of wailing if we fall behind in economic incentives to bring businesses here. We're very conscious of that without any accountability as far as I'm concerned. And yet, when it comes to funding, we seem to think that if the school districts are doing well, we say they don't need any more money. And if they're not doing well in some category that you test, then we say, well, I guess they don't deserve any more money. They're held to a totally different standard. I think most legislators know better, and I think I think they're all coming to the realization. I really do that we need to do better in the funding area. It's not the most popular thing to talk about. Obviously, the taxpayer would like to believe that we can fix things with more testing or more this or more regulations or more state control or more federal control or less federal or state control, all these excuses that we've heard. Sadly, when it comes right down to it, as any business person knows, when it comes right down to it, resources do matter. You can publish better magazines if you have better resources, or you can run a better trucking company, or you can run a better law firm if you've got the best resources, and you can run the best schools if you've got adequate to the best resources. In our school districts, where we're handicapping them because they've got the poorest resources in the seven-state region. We need to compare ourselves to the seven-state region. I've tried to push that idea out here. It'd be nice if we could compare ourselves to the world, but pitifully, we can't even begin to do that. First, we've got to decide that we want to be at least average in the seven-state region. And once we do that, then maybe we can start to talk about being average or better, above average, I would hope, in the country. And then once we do that, we can start talking about education and how we compete with the rest of the world. But South Dakota first we just have to try to be average in the seven-state region. I hate to say that about my home state, the state I love, but that's where we're at. We need to start comparing ourselves to these seven states and saying, you know, why can't our students at least deserve an average education for this region? They're not getting it right now.
Are there any questions from the callers on the phone?